All right, so today we will finish up with our video with Emily, but I made this last Sunday after thinking through how to visually represent what we'd been talking about. So I'm going to walk through this, and then I'll print several of these, and we can have them next week for you guys to take home for more feedback. I want to continue to improve this. I don't want this to be a one-time kind of quick thing, but something that I improve over time. It'll probably have to have another page that will go and explain it, kind of what I'm going to explain now, and then you guys can help me work to where someone could pick it up and with a small amount of explanation and type be able to understand what this is doing and not have to have someone come and explain it. That would be how it could be most valuable. But the idea what I was going for was both trying to, on the left side, trying to show that role of the Holy Spirit, which we've talked about several times, that we're not leaving that out of it. And on the right side, we're showing, so I'll go over here since most of you are looking at this. On the right side here, we're showing what is the basis for kind of understanding or the next thing being possible. And so what I want to demonstrate is it's not that faith is less than something else, but what is there sort of necessary for faith to even come about? So you're not losing, and that's where I went, not just to faith, but added hope and love to kind of show that ascending in some ways. So obviously, faith, hope, and love are very important in Christianity, and so we could say, I don't want to say, well, love is more important, and if you have love but you don't have faith, that's okay. What I'm just trying to show is a visual representation of how those things can be a basis for the next without saying, well, science or history is more important than faith. It's just that in order for you to have the next level, the first one has to exist. And so the whole basis for everything is God, right? There's nothing without God. So God is there. Because God is there, we have two things that come about or that are in Him, grounded in God, that are necessary for everything else that follows. One is logic, which just exists. That's just, that a thing is not what it is and something else at the same time in the same way. So it's not a dog and a cat at the same time in the same way. It's either a dog or it's not a dog. That's it. And so you have the basic laws of logic, which are grounded in God. And then you have creation, which is grounded in God. God is moment by moment sustaining everything else in existence. And we could go into depth in that and talk about a philosophical argument from Aquinas that establishes that. But the main point is creation, God is literally sustaining. Imagine a hand holding up creation at all moments. And if he were to, now he wouldn't, but if he were to take it away, it doesn't have any other basis on which it can exist, okay? And why I think that's important is because we're not separating from God when we start talking about history and science and philosophy. Everything we're talking about is grounded back in God. Whether people recognize that or not is a different situation. But I just want to show for our purposes, we're not putting ourselves apart from God or putting faith apart from reason. I'm trying to show how it all connects together. So you have God, logic and creation flow from that. From there, we now go, so that's the basis of existence is God. The basis that we know God exists is from the things which he's made. This is a Romans 1 type argument that from the things he's created, we know that he exists. And so we have our experience of the world, and from that and our interaction with the world, we can do science, philosophy, history, and then we have personal experience, which I think can include our recognition of the brokenness of the world and conviction of sin. Okay, from some combination of these things, we come to understand some things about God. We can come to understand that he exists, somewhat what he's like, not exactly what he's like, but certain things, that he's creator, that he's powerful, the power that he has, and then his authority. In the same way, using history, we can find those things about Jesus, his life, death, burial, resurrection, and his authority. Okay? And on the basis of those things, then faith can come, because we have to know something about Jesus or God, even if it's very, very simple. The person broken that's crying out to God, not knowing exactly who he is, but knowing that they are broken, that they can't escape their sin. They hate it and they love it at the same time. And they know there has to be something more, and they're crying out to God. I think God can respond to that. So it's not going to be the same for everyone, but some combination of this is going to be the basis upon which faith is possible. And so then, like we said, faith is a belief based on authority, which is an extension of reason, an extension of our understanding of these things, in which we put an active trust. And so that builds the next one. And then once we have faith, then we can have biblical hope. Because remember, biblical hope is resting in the future certainty of what God has promised in spite of whatever our current circumstance may be. So this is what Paul would be talking about in Romans 8 when he says that hope that is not seen, what is seen is not hope, for who hopes for what he sees, but we anticipate it eagerly. So we anticipate it because God has promised this to be the case. Jesus has promised that we will be forgiven of sin, that we will be with him in heaven. So we rest in that knowledge in spite of if things are good now, we rest in that. If things are bad now, we rest in that. If things are transitioning up and down, we rest in that. Our hope is always grounded in that. So once we have hope, true biblical hope, then we can have true biblical love, which is not going to be necessarily grounded in what can you do for me, but I know what I am and what I have, so I can give far more than I would have been capable of otherwise. So it's a little tiny bit forced putting the hope and love as the extension, but I wanted to do that to really show we're not saying it's less valuable. That's not necessarily what it's about. And certainly faith is not less important than history, but it's just showing. And I think this is very biblical in the way that it's talked about. And so what I want to do is put a bunch of Bible verses in here that will help to back up each of these things, but that they're just, this comes and then this comes next and this come next. Now we start at this point, our experience of the world, these are already there before we start thinking about them or experiencing them. So they're the foundation, and then this is where we come in. So I said this is the existence. Existence is grounded in God, but this is the ground of us knowing about those things. So our experience of the world. Does that help at all? Yeah. Of some sort of God, yeah.
Yeah. At least in the Western.
Yes,
world,
right.
Evangelism started then at kind of your third level there.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'd say pretty much everyone had this God, and everyone had at least a sort of understanding of the life and death of Jesus. It's they didn't fully understand the implications and the authority. So your four spiritual laws. Right, or they didn't want to bother, or just hadn't been explained. Yeah, for various reasons.
Now, today, you've got people who
yeah.
start arguing with you
from
the second level.
Right. So now we have a lot more work to do because very few people start here. Yeah. Very few people. So we have to go back here. First, we probably have to establish God. Now, I think you could possibly establish Jesus first and sort of that being an argument for God. If someone rose from the dead, if a miracle happened, then God would exist. So there might be the chance of that, and that would be something in a given conversation you'd have to find out. Because I would go to talking about Jesus and what do you make of the resurrection, the historical evidence for the resurrection. I would try to have that conversation first, but if the person says, well, I wouldn't even consider a miracle because I don't think that's possible, when I would ask more questions about that, I might find out, okay, I'm going to really have to show some evidence for God first, because then that makes miracles possible. And so now the resurrection as a miracle is at least possible. So that's going to be, there's not going to be a one-size-fits-all formula for that, because some people might just go with it like, oh, okay, well, yeah, if someone rose from the dead, that I guess that would be proof that God exists, where others are going to say, no, you'd have to prove God before I would even consider that. And they may not say it quite that way. They may just say, well, I could never believe that. I could never believe. And then you have to press into, well, why couldn't you believe that? And what you might get to then is, well, because miracles aren't possible. That would never be an explanation. Hume has a very popular or well-known historical argument where he essentially says a miracle is, by definition, the least likely explanation I'm sort of paraphrasing it, but the least likely explanation for anything, and therefore it's never the best explanation. There's never enough evidence for a miracle because it's always the least plausible explanation for everything, which is a mistaken assumption, because if it's the best explanation, then even if it's improbable, that's the whole point of a miracle. If they happen all the time, if it was one of the most common explanations for something, then it wouldn't really probably be a miracle. Or it wouldn't stand out to us as miracles. You know, God could do miracles all the time, but that would defeat, if the purpose of a miracle is for us to understand, okay, wait, God is there, or Jesus is unique and Jesus has this authority. If God was doing miracles all the time, which theoretically he could do, it would defeat the purpose of why he would do miracles, because they're supposed to point us back to him. So if they're just happening all the time, well, then we kind of would just lose any value in it for us to come to know God. So we wouldn't do this. And again, this is also very important on here. This is for man. This is from man's perspective, not God's. God doesn't need these things to come to, like, he just knows. He's the ground of everything. So this is only our basis for man coming to know these things, not God. So I think there's a variety of Bible verses we could put in here. We were talking yesterday at our retreat. I was talking with Paul and Eric, and you know, Eric was saying that, like with Nicodemus, when he says, how can you if you don't believe earthly things, how could you believe heavenly things? Gotcha.
I'm sorry.
No worries. I do that as well. So does that at least help to sort of begin to visually represent what we've been talking about and how those things stack together? But you notice they're not separated. They're all stacked together. They're all linked. You can't take them apart. Now, you could do science completely apart, right? And you could do science that has assumptions that say there is no God, there is none of this. I would just say it's probably illegitimate. And then we could start to question. And when somebody wants to say faith, I'm a little hesitant to say, you know, well, when you do science, it requires faith, unless I really would have a good chance to explain what I mean by that, because I'm going to assume they're just going to take whatever they think of as faith, put it on the Bible, and so if I say that and say it's illegitimate, then they're going to transfer it to the Bible. So I would say, you know, you're already making assumptions to do science, but I personally wouldn't use the word faith, because I think it starts to confuse things too much. Okay.
His famous expression was, "What, me, worry?" The average guy on the street, maybe not so much here in the South,
mm-hmm.
but in many places,
mm-hmm. the Western world,
they don't give a rip about any of this.
Mm-hmm.
How do you meet somebody who has dismissed it as something they're just not interested in?
Yeah, well, so that's where asking questions, figuring out what is it that they do have worry about, what is it they're interested in. It may be something they're worried about, it may be something they're interested in, it may be something they enjoy, and trying to find those bridges. So if it's, you know, it might be, let's say someone who says they don't care about any of that God stuff, but then they have strong views on certain moral stances. Maybe it's nowadays a social justice thing.
So,
right. Say, okay, so that's interesting. So you think it's really important that whatever. Where do you think, why do you think all people have equal value? You know, where do you get that from? And just ask, and then let them talk. And then ask another question. And eventually you can get to something, well, it doesn't seem like, so what broader value do you ground that in? Because it seems like that's just arbitrary. Like, give me the reason I would have to think the same way. And they're going to have to start to appeal to something more ultimate, and it's not going to be there. So you can say, I think the only way you can make sense of that is grounding that in something more like my understanding of what God is. So you'd have to show that. And then, so it's figuring out either what's their pain point, what is it that they're really struggling with, or what is their interest that you can use as a bridge or some combination thereof. So. Yeah, often. Yeah, exactly. And he would meet them there, you know, the woman at the well, right? And so he's hitting on that pain point, and then that's really
the
trigger.
The woman at the well believes in that.
Yeah, she did.
Everybody believes something.
Right.
They've not given it a whole lot of thought.
Exactly.
They may just absorb
Right. Right. Yeah, and some people, yeah, may just have never been walked through and helped to even think about it at all. So it might be just asking some questions to guide them through. They're rejecting something that they've never really considered because nobody's ever helped them seriously think through it. And so they may be much more open than we think, or there may be a lot of resistance there, and then we can say, you know, it doesn't seem like you're really even open to thinking about this. Why is that? You know, what's the harm if you're truly just about being honest and pursuing, you know, whatever truth, then it doesn't seem like you're doing that.
So I recently came across some interesting information on YouTube.
Okay.
By a retired FBI negotiator who talked kidnappers and terrorists out of wanting to murder people.
Okay.
I wondered if we could use some of his type of approach in this, because he would approach the other person, he would find out what their perspective is, and try to work on that.
Yeah, I guess basically. So I'd have to watch it and see. But yeah, I mean, it's figuring out what is it that is of value to this person, whether they realize it or not. They may have something that's really valuable to them, and they haven't even thought through it enough to understand that. But we might be able to help them think through it. And, you know, some of you may have been in teaching Simon Braisted when he was here for a while before they went back to South Africa. And he'll sometimes talk about how we have to put people's worldview together. We have to sort of duct tape their worldview together for them and hold it up so we can step back with them and then look at it, because it's so inconsistent and doesn't work, but they've never thought through it. So we have to help them even see those contradictions. Now, not everyone's going to be open to that. There's going to be some that have a sort of volitional, willful, well, I don't care if it doesn't work. I believe it anyway. Right, and I don't want to care. Now, we have Christians that'll do the same thing, so we don't escape scot-free, right? Right, so he's...
On the opposite side of the fence, and he's got
an agenda. Right, this could be, right. So this, while he I would say, has ill intent, this could be really good for a Christian that, you know, Kim should go home and think, okay, I've got to think through this better, because I do know it's true. I know, but I need to know how to share that with others and say it in a coherent way. So this could be very good for, it could also wreck a Christian, which is kind of more the goal, and to make them abandon their faith. That's really kind of probably more what he's going for. So anyways, I hope that chart will be helpful. I'm going to print it off for next week. I'm going to put a little bit more on it, put some Bible verses. And then I'll want you guys to go home and analyze it and then give me feedback. Paul? That's supernatural. Right.
Because that's what an Anthony would do.
Right.
Show me supernatural.
Right.
And he won't even have the God conversation.
Right.
So you can prove that extra or super or other natural exists.
Right.
Right. Because if only natural exists, God can't.
Right.
Right. So even just having that conversation of how do we know that the supernatural exists would be light years ahead of where many of us have been, many of the Christian world is, to be able to have conversations with people that are getting,
right,
that are getting strategically indoctrinated into the supernatural does not exist in,
right,
all of the schools, in all of our country, in all of the world.
And I would even guess that Anthony, if I said, well, here's a philosophical argument for, he would, no, that doesn't legit, that's not science. So I would have to use science to even, now, I couldn't use science to establish philosophy. What I would do is use his assumptions to show you're already doing philosophy. But I would have to establish that philosophy is legitimate to an Anthony. And then we could now move on to, okay, well, here's how, philosophical, you know, you need some sort of philosophical explanation for how this, the uniformity of nature, the beginning of the universe, the beginning of biological life. You need some sort of, it doesn't seem like a natural cause works there, but you'd have to establish even the potential for anything outside of pure science with Anthony, which I think you could do. I think you could show whether he would follow it or not. But, you know, I think, as has been mentioned here by a couple of people, if at least one, if not a couple of people, just how do you assume, why do you assume science always works the same? Why do you assume the natural world doesn't change? You have this inbuilt assumption of the uniformity of nature, but prove that scientifically to me. You can't do it.
And I think it's, you know, it's one of those questions.
Right.
Legitimate, because it would force Anthony to realize that not everything, even if there is no God, you can't explain something through science. And like the question for Anthony is, I'll answer that question if you can tell me one thing, and that is, why is it wrong to torture and kill babies?
Maybe. So the thing that's dangerous with that, though, is unless you know that he's going to establish that moral absolute. I've talked to someone who said, yeah, it's subjective. It's like, okay, well, at that point, yeah. Right. So with Anthony, what I would do, because I think the Ferrari example was a lot better with him, in that you could say, okay, well, let's just go look. So if you could prove it, if people saw that you flew off in your Ferrari, then would that be reason for people to believe you have a flying Ferrari? And he would seem to say yes. Okay, well, in the same way, the reason I believe in the resurrection is because people saw it. And he's going to say, well, how do you know that? Ah, great question. So now we're going to start to talk history, but this is why it's legitimate for me to go there. But you would agree on the premise that if we could see something, that would verify that it's true, most likely, you know. You could do magic tricks or whatever, and he might appeal to that. So then you'd have to be prepared for, well, the resurrection, how is it not a magic trick? And so we could get into a conversation on the alternative theories for the resurrection. But there would be a point where I think we could do that for sure, Danny. But I still think I would first try to keep it on the grounds he's established, because he's talking about the right thing. So if we can talk immediately about faith and get on proper definition of that, and I can go straight to the evidence for the resurrection, I'm not going to get distracted by going and having a debate about that. Now, if he's refusing to, then there might be a point where you do something like that to show you do have some sort of absolutes that you buy into that aren't purely scientific. And then from that, then we try to go back. But we don't need to go there unless that's necessary, I guess is what I would say. Go ahead, Ken. Yeah.
Because go back 50 years and nobody knew about DNA.
Right.
We were getting a lot of things being proved.
And now we're going.
You just say, well, where did the information content of DNA come from?
Exactly. And now. Right.
Suddenly they don't have an answer, because science doesn't.
Yeah, science is really struggling too. And because it's getting even worse for them, because now it's not only DNA, it's not just genetics. But it's what's another level called epigenetics. And so now what they're finding is it's not just a matter of the same protein sequences, because the same protein sequence folded a different way does a completely different function. So they're finding not only is it, okay, you have, you know, your RTGB, right? ACGT. So it's not only what's the order of those, but when you have the chains, the sections, based on another molecule that comes in and folds those in chains in different shapes, it can do, and there's some good examples we could find for you guys to see, but I've read enough of it to remember there's some examples where it's like this doing one thing is some very simple process in digestion, and then this folded this other way creates a whole nother thing that does something totally different. So the function that they perform when folded differently, it's not even a different form of the same function. It does two completely different things based on that folding pattern. And so that's another level they're calling epigenetics. And the information content to be able to have all of that happen and to have the sort of molecular factories that are pumping these things out and know what to do and do these different things and then the different functions happen, it's absolutely unreal. So we can say without a doubt, not even close, the most complex, sophisticated, and compact design factories in the history of creation are molecule, are DNA, like the first ones. The first ones are far more complicated than any that have come after. And not only that, but they're self-replicating. So it's not just that you can perform this really complex function, but it's a self-replicating function. And so, yeah, it defies scientific explanation. So what they're finding is that this is happening. How to explain how that started happening is going to be really, really hard for them. Yeah.
The law of entropy that says organized things become disorganized. But then you have the theory of evolution,
mm-hmm.
which says that things are going to be getting better.
More and more organized and complex.
So science itself, now, my guess is that an intellectual atheist is going to have an answer for that. And I'm even thinking the response, if I'm an atheist, my response to you on what we're learning about DNA is, well, of course.
Right, that's just what it is. Right.
Right. We've evolved to this, and so we're getting better, and now we're just seeing more clearly how further we've evolved.
Right. To which, well, right, but I'm not even going to debate the evolution aspect of it. I'll just grant that for the sake of talking to Anthony, because there's no way I'm going to have a debate on that, a fruitful one. I'm going to go back to, yeah, but how did the first one come into existence? So if you came across... Let's just say we finally send a crew to Mars, right? And they land on Mars, and they end up finding this book with some language, and it's thousands of pages thick. Would you assume that there just must have been some natural forces on Mars that put this together, and it just sort of happened to create this thing that we would know as a book, and it kind of looks like information? No. You would know there's something different about this than rocks and rivers and ice and whatever else you are expecting to find. Well, if they find a microbe on Mars, they know that means something. But like something happened, there's life, because life doesn't randomly come about. So there has to be, that means some sort of, you know, it means something. Well, it's like, okay, well, let's take that thinking back. How did life begin here? You know, and it's the beginning of life that is our strongest point. The debate on evolution, I do think we have the upper hand. That's going to be a lot harder, because people think, and it's something all of us hold by authority, our positions are, most of us, whether we deny evolution or believe evolution, most of us hold that belief based on authority. It's actually more of a faith-based, there. It's going to be a combination, but we're going to understand a very small amount of the reason behind that. We don't understand the science, most of us. So why I think talking about evolution is not a very fruitful one is, most likely I don't know enough about it to talk about it, and most likely they don't know enough about to talk about it. So we're two total non-experts trying to pretend like we know what we're saying. And it's very easy to become ships passing in the night, because neither of us really, really know what we're talking about. So I do think you could bring up certain things, like just say, well, it seems like it'd be really hard for evolution to explain how you get this such an increase in complexity and information. What do you make of that? Right? So I can ask certain questions, but I'm not going to be able to give the full scientific breakdown of it. I can just ask certain questions that might get them thinking. But again, they probably don't understand it well enough, so they're believing it by authority. And when we believe something purely by authority and by faith in that way, it can be very immune to reason, which we see, again, not only on secular atheist side, but Christians do that as well. Kim, she was proving your process doesn't work, and she's, well, I believe it anyway, and that's all that matters.
Turtles all the way
Right, turtles all the way down. So we have to be careful what grounds we start to get in discussion on if neither of us are actually know what we're talking about. It's just not going to be that fruitful to me.
Also, aren't we talking about an interpretation of
the data? Right.
That is incomplete?
Right, exactly.
And so killing an unborn baby or a live baby?
Oh, he's just saying live. Any
okay.
Live, you'll get more people to... With science. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. So the question is, on what basis do we know, and is that something we can communicate to someone? To me, is that something we can give to someone else to analyze, or do we hold it in a way, and what we're trying to get away from is explaining it in a way like Kim did, where it's not possible to just transfer that to someone else. It's more just saying, this happened to me. This happened to me. Okay, well, that's great, but what do I do with that? Go ahead, Paul.
I think it would be fascinating to have a conversation with him. How did you establish authoritative research?
Mm.
Right. Because we can talk about the things that we can accept, know, agree.
Right.
But if I'm going to attempt to persuade him, compel him to whatever my position is, I need to know, how did you come to the place where you, and whoever it is,
right. Right.
That science book was right. That might help me be able to then say, okay, well, here's how I
right.
get to a place where I accept the authority that I do.
Right.
And then to be able to try to find, I think,
for sure.
Step back to how do we even establish authority in the resources that we're using to come to the conclusions on the questions we're asking?
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. And asking those questions. Because there's a challenge in that, what happens when authorities disagree, right? You have brilliant, brilliant Christian scientists and brilliant, brilliant atheistic scientists, and they come to very different interpretations. So how do we know which one's right? And most of us don't have the capacity to go anywhere near where they are, right? So this is why I think philosophy is so valuable, because that is the equalizer. So it's, what are the philosophical assumptions that they're making? I have a little bit more ability to access that and to analyze that. I think we all do in that. So if Anthony is saying, well, I know that's not possible because the supernatural is never an explanation. Like, you could never have a miracle happen. Okay, well, that seems to be a philosophical assumption. Why do you make that assumption? Now we're going to get to something. We can actually have that discussion. You know, the complexities of DNA and whatever, I can just say, I know that there's a lot of information. Where does the information come from? But again, that's a philosophical question. That's why you'll hear me say philosophy is so important. We don't need to go study Foucault and Hume and get into all the weeds of every philosophy ever. But that where we can have discussion with people is most likely going to be more on philosophical questions that are the basis of assumptions on which we're doing whatever else we're doing. Not that we have to study philosophy in depth necessarily, but that those are the questions. So when we ask, where did information come from? How do you know that there's uniformity to nature, that it's always the same? How do you know miracles are not possible? Those are really philosophical questions. They're not purely scientific ones.
Didn't Stephen Hawking say that philosophy is dead?
Yes, yeah. So he said philosophy is dead.
Sort of a philosophical statement.
Right, exactly, right. So, but he doesn't know that. So that's what I would say to him if I was with him. I'd say, well, you just made a philosophical statement. And it would be intriguing to see what he says. I'd say, and if he didn't get it, I'd say, well, prove scientifically that. And what he's going to say is, well, science has made more progress. Okay, well, that's a philosophical assumption then, that the field which makes the most progress, therefore, is the only one that's the way we come to truth. But you can't. That's a philosophical assumption. So you've actually now established philosophy again. Like, whatever you do, you're bringing philosophy back in. He just doesn't know it because he's not thinking, I didn't go do Aquinas' five proofs or Hume's whatever. I'm just doing science, and science makes progress. But as you said, Paul, science, not only are there scientists that are contradicting each other right now, but science is constantly progressing, which means proving that it was wrong. So actually, science has, in some ways, a really bad track record. Now, it's interesting in that I do think it does make some progress, but the progress often shows us they didn't know what they were talking about before. So we could just say, why now, if the whole history of science is that we were wrong before, how do you know now we're at the place where we're not wrong anymore? You know, which is interesting. So I think we can use it as far as it goes, and we can establish certain things. But we don't have to be. I think there are so many different ways we see that science is not the only way to truth. Not only because that's like we've said, it's absurd because you can't prove that scientifically. But you see that borne out in other ways too, where science begins to contradict itself, change, and whatever. So. Well, so that it depends. Now, again, we have to think about there's different fields. You know, one thing I need to add to that chart actually is morality, moral truth. So, if we're talking about moral absolutes or scientific absolutes or philosophical, so what are we talking about here? And again, what is the basis on which you establish that? So, if you have moral absolutes, but you say that you're only a naturalist, that all there is nature, there's no God, there's no philosophy, there's no nothing, but we need to, pick whatever your social justice issue is, if they're really fired up about. Well, okay, what's the basis? Remember, you said all that, it's just nature, there's just atoms smashing against one another. On what basis do you say we have to do that if we're just atoms smashing against one another? And now they're going to have to start to backtrack because you can't establish that on science alone. But most people won't have thought about that because they know, they internally know whatever ones they pick. Now, they might suppress other ones that they should know, but there's going to be something where I know that Hispanics have equal value. They're not less. Right, so they get fired up about you. How dare someone like they take bad examples. You take someone who's really racist, and they go after that. That's terrible. Well, I would agree, but I have a basis on which to say that because I think everyone is made in the image of God. Everyone has value. They're infinitely valuable in that perspective. What basis do you which? Right. What basis do you make that claim? Because why not go with what Hitler and others were buying into at the time, that there's a superiority in races? It seems to make a lot of sense on a evolutionary scale, right? And that was based on pure science, right? Evolution, there have to be superior races because we're evolving. So of course there are. So which ones are the smartest? Now what they fall short on is actually the Jews, IQ-wise. The Jews are at the top on average IQ, which is interesting. That basis, if Hitler actually made a lot more sense, the eugenicists, that made sense scientifically. But then everyone says, no, that's insane. Well, I agree, but I have a basis on which I can say that's insane. What's your basis? You know, and those are where we can start to have some fruitful conversations. Now, it may not go real far, because as soon as they start to feel it and they get hot and they might want to avoid it, but at that point, that's not something that's going to leave them very easy. And so if they may not, hey, okay, tell me more about God, I'm ready now, but they may walk away from that and they're still sweating and their head is spinning like, wait a second, wait, how do I do this? This doesn't make sense. And then they're going to think, no, don't do that. And, you know, who knows where that's going to take them. But if that's what we accomplish with an Anthony, awesome. Right? That's a great step.
And it's interesting to note that atheism has killed more people in
history. Right.
Like,
actually, within
the last century,
that all other
religions in history.
Right.
And where do you go with that?
Yeah.
That's right.
Right, because then you don't have a basis on which you can say that those things are wrong. Absolutely, yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. So what I mean is just the physical world by creation, not the process, not the time frame, just that there is a physical world. And if we really wanted to, what you might get into with certain, and just be aware, I'm going to say this for if somebody goes down this path, if they say, well, we don't know that there's a world, we just know we're thinking about something, right? And you could run into someone, it's going to be rare, but someone who thinks that, well, how do we know it's real? And that's a whole nother discussion. Just be aware, but okay, fine. Whatever it is that we think there's something we're thinking about that's outside of us. But for most people, when you say, okay, just the physical world, what we mean by creation, the universe, the stars, the trees, the ground, that is what I mean by creation. Not 6 days, 20 billion years, whatever, a creation model, just that there is a physical world. And that is grounded in God. And there are philosophical proofs that we can actually show that, I think, that are really, really compelling. I don't know how you get around. Aquinas has one that's really good, because Aquinas has one where even if the universe is eternal, he shows that it's you have to have an ultimate sort of something, God, a being that just is existence, even if everything else, like a universe is eternal, you still need a God that's the ground of that eternal universe. And so that's a really good one. Not that we have to believe that, and I think Aquinas actually denies that. He thinks that the universe had a beginning. But he's saying, even if not, you still need God. That's the ground, and that's the, he had made this statement, turtles all the way down. So what that comes from is someone who's going to say, okay, you say this thing exists. Well, what's the basis of that? Well, it's this other thing. Okay, well, what's the basis of that? Well, it's this other thing. And what's the basis of that? What's this other thing? And then they just have to keep going infinitely, which doesn't work. Where we're saying, and what the chart shows is, no, God is that ground. God is the ultimate ground. He doesn't need something to be the explanation for him. But the explanation for how we have creation is because God is there as the ground of it, and we stack it on top. It comes from him. And then these other things can go from there. But the naturalist doesn't have that philosophical grounding. And so it works if we just think about what we're seeing today, if we just go back to the beginning of evolution, or we go back to the moment of the Big Bang. But when you start to go beyond that, I don't even want to say before, because it's not before. There is no before, which is one of the complicated things. Our language starts to fail us. There's no before the Big Bang, because there was no time, right? That's the whole science is just saying. It's the beginning of time and space and matter. Then there is no before, but you still have to say, where did it come from? So it has to come from something that's immaterial, that's outside of time, that's not physical, that's powerful, that's intelligent. Happen to know something that's kind of like that, you know?
Science has explained away the problem of eternity with the Big Bang.
Right. But it helps us. Yeah, they've... So some might say that. The thing is that there's atheistic scientists that have disproven that, that say that doesn't work. So that's a nice, cute idea, what they've said. I keep trying to think of the name. There's a pretty, and as far as I understand, now I'm way outside of my league here, but as far as I understand, the work these three guys did showed that in any expanding, something like if there's an expanding universe or accelerating expanding universe, then even if you have some sort of multiverse, somehow they show that even if there's a multiverse, there's other universes that our universe came from. If there's one that is doing what our universe does, then you still have to have some sort of ultimate beginning.
We have to define our terms. What's a universe? To me, it's everything.
Yes. So, right. So you're meaning everything that would exist anywhere, even if there was another dimension or universe. Sure, that might be. But what a science-minded naturalist would mean is our universe that contains our stars and our galaxies, and if there's another one, that would be some sort of like separate thing. There's no evidence for that. You know, that sort of starts to reaching. And again, when something gets way outside your zone, don't go there and debate. Just ask, why do you think that, We're just asking questions. Remember, that's what. When in doubt, just ask a question. And simple questions like, how do you know that? What's the basis on which you think that's the best explanation? What's the evidence for that that you're aware of? I'm not going to go and debate that because I don't know the science, but I'm going to say why. And I can show you, tell you this works because we were at Clemson University doing Q&A. They did a Ravi Zacharias event, and some of us from the seminary went, and we were in the concourse of the basketball arena. And they had tables labeled, and the people who set this up didn't really know what they were doing. So I was at a table labeled atheism, and Mike Willenborg, which some of you may know, the most brilliant person I know, is way down at the other end at a table labeled philosophy. He had about 3 people come to him the whole night. I had about 40 people around me at any given moment trying to, and I'm like, Mike, help me! And I'm drowning here. So there's one point that I was debating, discussing with 3 guys around my standing table at the same time. And this one was getting his PhD in astrophysics. He was in like his second to last year. And so there's no way I'm going toe-to-toe with this guy talking about science. Not a chance. So I would just ask him questions. And he starts going into the multiverse and how it could work. So I picked up on that language. And I said, okay, let's just say, what's the evidence that it's real? And he starts to sort of fumble and goes back to, well, the equations show that this is possible. And I said, well, I just ask you again, what evidence do you have that it's real, though? And and I said, well, let me put it this way. Do you actually believe there's a multiverse? And he said, well, no, but it would work mathematically. I said, you don't even believe it. You don't have any evidence for it. So why would you bring that up? So I'm not going to go do the equations, right? I wouldn't stand a chance there. I barely got through Calc 1. But here I am able to talk. Why? Because I just listened to what he said and I asked questions. And what he did is he jumped in the world of philosophy. And I was like, welcome to the world of philosophy. Now we can have a discussion. But I'm not going to debate. He's using these equations. He's saying how you prove this thing, whatever, if this happens, this. Okay, fine. Why do you believe that? Why do you believe that's actually real? And scientists should know this. And they used to be much more, I think, honest about this. But there wasn't always the assumption that if they could get a math equation to work, that you would find that in the real world. And in fact, in the history of science, when it really, like the Enlightenment and as it started moving forward, they were pretty amazed at how often there was a correlation in the real world. They weren't assuming there would automatically be. And I think science has lost a little bit of that as they've become the reigning arbiters of truth. They've lost a little bit of that, but some simple questions, I think we can still get back to that sometimes. So I'm not saying you have to go and debate, but I'm just showing it to using that as an example of if we're just listening and we ask questions, we don't have to know all those things, and we still might be able to have some sort of fruitful discussion. And so asking people, why do you have that assumption? Why do you think that? What's the evidence that you have for that? Are going to be really fruitful. Anything else before we move on? Danny? Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, so I think when we did at the very beginning, I said I think we can approach things with 3 questions. You guys might have to help me. How do you know that? What was it? How do you know that? And why does it matter was the third. I'm blanking now. What? Why do you believe? Why do you believe? Yeah, what? I'm forgetting. Anyways, but the third one was, that question of what does it matter? And so what's the claim? How do you know that it's true? And why does it matter? I think can be really good. So exactly. So you can ask that. And I think we need to be prepared to answer that. So why we need to be able to explain why does it matter that God exists? Why does it matter that Jesus rose from the dead? That may not be as obvious to other people as it might be to us. Frustrating. Okay. Okay. Right.
Right, there was a season in our country, and even in our world, where we could, where, like you said before, where
Christianity was assumed.
People believed in the existence of the supernatural, the existence of God, and we could make a compelling argument.
And the authority of the Bible.
And the authority of the Bible. We could make a compelling argument with just simply...
Here's what the Bible says.
With the loving Jesus Christ.
Right, right. Could be a lot, lot more.
Could be as much as 85% of them are falling away from the faith.
Right.
And so for us to recognize the seasons have changed, and these guys like Anthony, a couple things on them. One, they have millions of views on YouTube. They have millions of people that are following them and listening to them.
Yeah,
and
or at least to start.
We have to raise our game so we can do what God's called us to do in Scripture to be ready to give an answer for what we believe, right? Because they're ready. I'm concerned. I have a biblical studies degree. I'm concerned that I could have a conversation with some of these atheists, and they might know more about Scripture than I do. Like, you listen to some of these guys, and they know. Now, they misinterpret it, and they misapply it. They know what the Bible says. So just to come at them and throw a Bible verse at them, they're just going to spit it back at you and tell you that you took it out of context.
Right.
They have all of these answers. So just a reminder that we have a generation that is falling away from the faith. Our seasons have changed, and it's time for us to be ready.
Right, yeah. And so you not only do you have the rise in atheism and secularism and naturalism, you also have a rise in cults, right? You think over the last 150 years, how many more people are involved in cults? How many Jehovah's Witnesses are here that weren't 40 years ago? And they'll know Scripture better than most Christians by far. They're going to know way more, right? That's like their thing, and they're going out all the time. And you have Mormon, you have all these other belief systems, and so we live in a world of very divergent, very diverse, and so that's why our thing is always, who is this person? What sort of common ground can I establish, even if it's very minimal with an Anthony? Okay, Anthony's all about reason. Fine, then let's go there. If that's what he's all about, reason and truth, then let's do that as best we can and show him, yeah, we still have a leg to stand on, and in fact, we have a better one. If it's, a Jehovah's Witness and they're all about the Bible and this, then that's going to be maybe where we start. Now, Bible ping pong with a Jehovah's Witness is probably not going to be very fruitful. If you've ever tried to do Bible verse exchanges with a Jehovah's Witness, it doesn't go because they've been very inoculated. So we want to do enough to show, look, we value Scripture, we know Scripture as well, but then we're going to have to start to ask some questions that push beyond that. And again, whether you want to call it philosophy or not, that's where we're going to end up going in most of these conversations. Because when you ask what's the basis for that? How do you know that's true? Often what we're doing, whether we call it or not, is philosophy. We could call it apologetics when we're giving a defense. I don't care what we call it. I just care that we know how to do it and that we learn how to do it better and better and better all the time, even if we're starting way, way behind and we feel like I'm so inadequate right now. We'll be more adequate next month than you are right now. That if that's our paradigm that we're all operating from, then we're going
to
be successful.
So I'm trying to simplify. And here, are we trying to establish that you can only go so far with logic or reason?
Well,
or experience?
I would say it has to have its rightful place. So I don't know that I would necessarily put it that way, sort of, but that each thing has its proper. So experience is not irrelevant. So it's not, well, don't use experience because it's irrelevant. It's not irrelevant. It's what can we do that establishes that, that makes that accessible to another person? Or reason, it has a role to play. There are different aspects of what we could call reason. So when I'm going to say, here's why I trust the eyewitness accounts of the apostles, I'm using reason, whether we want to call it that or not. I'm not concerned. But I'm reasoning why I, what's my basis for this? And then that's something they can say, well, I don't think the same way, or well, but how would you know? And now, but we've given something that we put something on the table that they can look at and they can say, well, but I'm going to say this now. Where if we just say, well, this is what happened to me, well, that's, we didn't put anything on the table for them to sort of analyze or touch and feel and sort of think about and respond to. So I wouldn't necessarily put it that way. We're trying to say, how do we think about how these things fit together and how we have a conversation, learning to listen for and pick out the different aspects. Right. Should inform our experience. Right. Right. Exactly. And then that's where, yeah, exactly. I'll just leave it at that.
I believe what you're saying. Mm-hmm. My mind goes back to a number of different books.
Okay.
Or presentations regarding sharing Christ, where they say, tell them your experience because they can't argue with that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. They also can't absorb it.
And you can't argue with theirs.
But I that's a common, I mean, yeah, no one can disprove your experience. You know, no one can take that away from you. Well, I agree. But it's not about you having something. It's about you giving something to someone, right? That's what we should be concerned about. Now, yes, we need to first take the step where it can't be just taken from us. One conversation with Anthony and we're done. We've abandoned the faith. That's, so there is a danger of it being taken, but everyone in this room, I'm fairly confident, is to the point where we're not as concerned about that. We want to say, no, we want to be ready to give something to someone. So, yes, no one can take your experience from you. I would agree. That's why I'm not saying experience is irrelevant, but I'm saying it's almost irrelevant or irrelevant in giving something to someone, because what do you do with that? And then, it may work sometimes. Now, here's another thing. It may work. Your experience, your testimony may bring someone to faith. That can happen. Two points on that. One, just because it works doesn't mean it's true or it's the best. Like it's just sort of coincidence. Two, my bigger concern is, what is it that person has faith in? Because sometimes the way testimonies are used, and I'm repeating, again, I'm going to do a lot of repeating because we need to go back and over these things, and you're free to challenge this too. But a lot of the way I've seen testimonies used ends up functioning in this way. Here's my testimony. Here's what Jesus did. Jesus can do this for you. And it ends up saying, trust me and what happened to me as the basis for why you should trust me. And then I'll give you Jesus. He's back behind me. But once you come through me and you accept me and my authority, then you can have Jesus next. And that's not what we should be doing in evangelism. It should be pointing out from us to Jesus. So if you use a testimony, and that can be compelling, that can be something, it should be done in a way that says, here's what happened to me. This was very meaningful. But I think the reason that happened is because it's true. Jesus actually was real. You can look in history. You can see this. He actually rose from the dead. He promised to send the Holy Spirit that gives us the power to overcome these things. I overcame because Jesus is real. He rose from the dead and the Holy Spirit's real. Not I'm the basis on which you believe those things. This worked. This happened to me because this is real out here. But this is where, don't look at me. You're done looking at me. You need to go look at Jesus. That's what our testimony should do. Where I just don't see that being the way testimonies are used often. So use them, and use them in a way that says, my life was changed. Yours could be too. It may be the same. It may be different. But the reason it can be changed is because Jesus is real. That power actually is there. Go look. Here's how, here's the path to going and looking at that. But you need to, because your life really could be changed. I don't want to, that's fine. Use that. We're actually thinking about how could we make some evangelistic tracks that start at what are people's kind of common challenges, common pain points that they deal with, and showing how Christianity can help with that. Now, often it's going to be, well, it's not working because you're pursuing that thing as ultimate, and as long as you pursue wealth or happiness or whatever it might be as ultimate, it's never going to satisfy. But why is that? Well, that's interesting. So the people that get all of that, they're still not content. Well, that's interesting. Maybe we're made in a way where that's not what we're supposed to pursue as ultimate. And so the only way you're going to be happy financially or content financially is if you don't pursue that as the end, but you pursue something else as the end. I would say God, right? And we could show that. And only then can we be content, whether we have little or we have much, because it's not what defines us. It's not what makes our life ultimate. So anyways, we're talking about that. But testimonies are very much something we can use as long as we use them the right way and we're not making that the basis on which someone else is supposed to come to faith. Because I even worry about false conversions where what they came to was, well, there's some power that will let me get what I want and so I'm going to have faith too. Well, what? They don't even know anything about God or Jesus, but they just know that I wanted out of this situation, and this person said that if you do these things, then you'll have that, and therefore, you know, Creflo Dollar said, if I send him this money, then God's going to bless me, and so I have faith, and I believe, and God's going to give me my $100,000 check in the mail, because he promised Creflo Dollar that there were 100 people who would give $1,000, and then one of them was going to get $100,000, and it's me, because I have the most faith, right? That happens. Why does that happen? Because people are buying into this notion of bad view of faith, bad view of what Christianity is, and they have no idea, and they're being schemed and conned because of that. And so these things have real-world consequences in a variety of different ways. But I'm definitely not, and I'll just keep saying it, I'm not saying experience is irrelevant. I'm not saying testimonies are irrelevant. It's putting everything in its proper place. Once we do that, then it's going to be very powerful. And we need to, as Kim shows, we need to think through it enough that even if we can't get in the weeds, even if we don't know advanced apologetics or whatever, we know how to put things in the proper place and to see when someone else is not doing that. And I really think we're all capable of getting at least better in that than we are now. Yeah, yeah. Okay, anything else? I guess we'll revisit Emily next week. Yeah, Emily next week. That's all right. So hopefully this was helpful. And again, I'll get that chart to everyone, again, for you guys to critique and say, I don't understand. That's what I want. So once we get it to everyone next week, I want you to go home and take it and write down and say, this doesn't make any sense to me. I don't understand what's happening here. Because that's what I need to make it better so that most people could look at it and they could get something out of it. I don't want those confusing points. So if we need to add more explanation, we'll do that. But I think we're really making a lot of progress here. I think it's been good for me to even think through. I think we're all growing a lot. That's my sense. Would you guys agree? Is this proving fruitful week by week? Good. Good. And it's a lot of fun. I enjoy it. I hope you all enjoy it at least somewhat as much as I do. Anything else? Final comments? Awesome.